the threefold training. Today we just completed a one-day Anapanasati retreat with Silas Susila. It's very interesting. So tonight's talk will be continuation of the training. And tomorrow morning, there's also a Dharma talk at 9 o'clock called Turning the Wheel of Dharma. Okay? So I'll briefly introduce Silas Susila. Venerable Silas Susila obtained a degree in Mass Comm from USM and was ordained as a Theravada Buddhist nun in the Burmese tradition at the age of 28 in Malaysia. After ordination in 1991, she practiced intensively in Myanmar for 3 years under the guidance of Sayadaw U Pandita. In 1994, Silas Susila placed herself under the guidance of Sayadaw Pa'au, where she also learned Abhidhamma, the ancient discourses, and the Pali language. During that time, she also became Sayadaw Pa'au's English to Chinese interpreter. She also practiced different meditation methods, such as those taught by Shiumin Sayadaw, Mogok Sayadaw, and Sayagi Ubakin. As a result, Venerable Silas Susila has become an unusually accomplished teacher, able to present the subtleties of the Buddha's teaching in a simple and direct way. Silas Susila has traveled extensively abroad as a meditation and Dharma teacher. She speaks fluent Chinese, English, Burmese, Hokkien, and Malay. So we invite Silas Susila to give the Dharma talk on the threefold training.
Samanta Chakkawalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Sadhammam Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokadam Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayang Badanda Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayang Badanda Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayang Badanda Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Today, tonight, I would like to share with you the threefold training. Threefold training. The threefold training of morality, concentration, and wisdom. And this is same as Noble Eightfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path, the first right view and right thought, these two are under wisdom training. And the next one, right action, right speech, and right livelihood are under morality training. And the last three, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration are under concentration training. So this threefold trainings, same as Noble Eightfold Path. So first, I would like to talk about morality training. As a Buddhist, especially in Asia, we all know, and most of us practice this morality training. For monastic, we have monastic's rule. And for layperson, we have 5 precepts, 8 precepts, and so on. So since the audience are a lay person, so let me share it a bit, these five precepts. We all understand these five, right? Abstaining from killing, abstaining from stealing, sexual misconduct, and abstaining from telling lies, and abstaining from taking instogens like drugs and alcohol and so on. Okay. This Asian people knows very well. But why? Why should we undertake this morality training? Why? Because teacher says so. Because the monks always ask us to take five precepts, then we take five precepts. This is called, then you take the five precepts based on faith only, not based on understanding. Okay, so we take five precepts based on three considerations, or three reasons. First, we take five precepts, or we cultivate this morality training because based on compassion, out of compassion for other beings. Suppose you walk down, you walk down at night, you walk down to the street, and one robber taking his knife suddenly appear and want to cut your throat. How do you feel? Fear. Fear of what? Fear of death. Why fear of death? Because we love life. Because we love life. We want to continue to live. So from your own experience, you understand all beings share the same thing. All beings, also all sentient beings, love life. They want to live continuously without being killed by anyone. So through our own understanding, we understand other people as well. So out of compassion for other people, we abstain from killing. This is the first consideration, out of compassion for others. Okay. And when I was in USA, conducting a 10-day retreat, one day during the interview, one of the yogis, she is Bikuni. She came to me and crying. She came to me crying and crying, crying and crying. Then I have to wait until she stopped her crying. So then I asked, what's wrong? Then she told me her story. When she was very young, very often she was sexually abused by her relative. Maybe by her stepfather or uncle, I cannot remember now. So this incident, this bad incident, left behind so much suffering in her that from that onward, she has no sense of security. Whole her life, she has no sense of security. She becomes suspicious towards other people. So suppose our daughter also the victim like her as a parent, what do you feel? What do you feel? Anger, right? Anger. Sometimes you may even want to, if you know the who is the man, you may even want to kill the man. Therefore, from the suffering of others, we must develop compassion. We don't want anyone suffer because of us. Therefore, out of compassion for others, we abstain from sexual misconduct. We abstain from killing. And we abstain from taking what is not given to us. Anything that do not belong to us, we don't want to take away. This is the first consideration. The second consideration, why we undertake morality training, because we understand the law of karma. The law of karma said, good begets good, bad begets bad. When you throw a ball onto the wall, the ball rebounds to you, not to other people. The ball cannot go singing, rebound to other people, directly to you. Or when you in a valley, let's say you come to a valley and you shout, John, John, the echo also will be John. The echo will not turn to be Michael, right? So this is called the law of karma. And when we understand the law of karma, we also must understand its effect. Every karma leaves behind three types of effect. One is called current life effective karma. Second one is called next life effective karma. Third is called indefinite effective karma. Let me explain to you the first one first, current life effective karma. I have read one story in the newspaper long, long time ago, not very long, maybe 1 year, 1 year ago. This happened in India. There was a girl, she was sexually abused again by a man. After that, she cried all the time, she lived in suffering. She was crying all the time, and her father cannot bear to see her suffering. And one day, her father take a knife, go to the man's house, because her father knows who is the man who inflict pain to her daughter, to his daughter. So her father take the knife, directly go to the man's house and cut off his sexual organ. After cut off his sexual organ, he killed him and cut into pieces his body, because he cannot bear to see his daughter's suffering. All the suffering, her daughter's suffering is caused by this evil man. So he want to take revenge. And also he want to release his anger. So he cut off his organ and kill him. Later on, he surrendered himself to the police also. So this is called current life effective karma. You see the man, he inflicted, he sexually abused a woman, and he has to pay his life in this present life. No need to wait until next life. His sexual organ was cut off and he was killed and cut into pieces in this very present life. This is called current life effective karma. Some of the karma were ripened in this very life. If in this very life this karma has no opportunity to ripen, then next life. It may ripen in the next life. And this person will go into hell or become hungry ghost or become animals, depend on how heavy is his karma. How heavy is his unwholesome karma. And after paying next life, after paying our debt, after undergo all the bad consequences in the next life, the karma will never become exhausted. The karma will continue. As long as we have these five aggregates, as long as we have nama rupa, mind and body, as long as our bad karma meet with all the favorable condition, it will continue to bear its result. This is called indefinite effective karma. Like Mahamangalana. Mahamangalana, in his past life, he killed his parents. And because of that, in that life, after that, he was cast down into Avijja hell, the greater's hell. And when he paid off his karma in the hell, not pay off all, he come up as a human being. Many of his life, he was beaten to death because he beat his parent to death. As a result, he was beaten to death for many, many lifetimes until the last life when he became Mahamangalana, who is foremost in psychic power, still cannot escape from this evil karma. So when one day when he was meditating in a room in his kuti, many robbers came, want to kill him. But at that time, he used his psychic power to escape. Second time also, when a robber came, he knew and he used his psychic power to escape. And the third time, when he was trying to escape by using his psychic power, suddenly he lost all his psychic power. He cannot enter into fourth jhana because to perform psychic power, you need to enter into fourth jhana. But he failed to enter into fourth jhana. So he cannot perform any psychic power. And all the robbers came in and beat him until his bones are as tiny as grain. So psychic power also cannot fight with karma. This is called current life effective karma. If we understand how karma works, we will be very careful about our own bodily action, verbal action, and mental action. Even mental action also can produce karma. In one of the Bodhisattva's life, our Prince Siddhartha, one of his past life, when he was a fisherman's son, small boy, so one day, his parents caught some fish, and they used the stick. They used the stick to beat the fish's head. As a boy, he doesn't understand. He thought it's very, very funny. It's very enjoyable. So he has a lot of happiness while seeing his parents using stick beat the fish's head. So mentally, he just feel happy only. And he had, because of that unwholesome mental karma, he has to suffer headache. Therefore, we must understand how the karma works. And this, I explain it very clearly in my book, Unraveling of Mystery of Mind and Body. If you want to know better how the karma work, how the mind work, then please read this book. Okay? So, we abstain from unwholesome, or we cultivate morality training simply because we understand the law of karma. We don't want to undergo all unwholesome result due to unwholesome karma. This is the second consideration. The third consideration, why we cultivate morality training, because we want to overcome transgressing defilements. There are three types of defilements. One is called latent defilements. Latent defilements lie dormant inside our mind. When there's no condition, it's just the latent defilements just sleeping, not waking up. Let's say, in a coffee shop, you enjoy the coffee with your friend. At that time, do you think you have anger or not? Yes or no? No. But do you think your anger is not light, dormant in your mind? Yes, right? It's just that the condition is not there for the anger to arise. So, after half an hour, your enemy suddenly appeared and scolded you, abused you. At that time, the anger that is lying dormant come to the surface, to the mind. Come from the surface, then up to the mind level. This is called arising defilement, the second type of defilement. So when the anger come to the surface of the mind, and you do not know how to deal with this anger, you do not know how to note, you do not know how to contemplate your mind, you do not know how to contemplate your mental state, then what will happen? So long you do not know how to contemplate your mental state, what will happen to you when the anger arises in the mind? For women, woman is not so violent. For men, maybe he will fight with. Sure, if he cannot control his anger, he will fight with the man. So fighting with the man is called transgressing defilement. So there are three types. One is latent. When there's no condition, it's just sleeping. Defilement are sleeping. But when the condition is there, then the defilement, latent defilement, will come to the surface, become arising defilement, rising at a mind level. And we don't have the skill to fight or to handle with this rising defilement, then we will put into action. This action is called karma. Bodily karma, or we will abuse him back. Verbally karma. Arise at the mental level, the anger arise at the mental level is already karma. We call mental karma. If we cannot control that, then we fight, it's called bodily karma, or we abuse him back, it's called verbal karma. So we undertake morality training because we want to overcome transgressing defilement. We do want our defilement to put into action. We want it to stop at the mental level only. Therefore, we undertake morality. We practice self-restraint, not to give in to unskillful bodily and verbal action. Because we understand the law of karma. This is one reason. Secondly, transgressing defilements is a great hindrance to concentration practice. Transgressing defilement is very gross type of defilement. It makes the mind very wide, violent, wide. So if we are unable to overcome the transgressing defilement, and we come to meditation practice, especially when we want to develop concentration, then all the unwholesome skill and all the unwholesome or unskillful action we have performed will pop up to the mind very often and disturb your concentration. You just cannot concentrate because all the unevil or all the evil or unskillful action will keep on pop up into your mind, and you feel very restless, and also you feel remorse. Remorse is one type of five hindrances. Restless is also one type of hindrances, one of the hindrances. Therefore, to overcome this transgressing defilement, we have to undertake morality training to make the mind more subtle, more refined, not so gross, not so violent, not so wild. Okay? So, to give you a guideline, what is unwholesome action? Not only five precepts. Five precepts are basic only. So to give you a guideline, how to avoid or how to know whether this is unwholesome action or not, Buddha admonished his, I will take what Buddha had admonished his son, Rahula. Now, one day, Buddha asked Rahula, he said, Rahula, what is the purpose of a mirror? Mirror. What's the purpose of mirror? To see whether I'm beautiful or not. To see whether I'm handsome or not. What's the purpose of mirror? Reflection. Yes, reflection. So then the Buddha admonished Rahula. Whatever action, before you do, whatever action, before you do any action, whether bodily, physically or mentally, you have to reflect it repeatedly. How to reflect it? You got to reflect it, whether this action, whether bodily, physically or mentally, bring affliction to others or not, cause suffering to others or not. Second, you also have to reflect, this action caused suffering to myself or not. And thirdly, this action, whether caused suffering both to both sides, the other side and myself. Then you also have to reflect whether this action will produce bitter consequences, whether the action I do will produce unwholesome, unwanted result. If the answer is definite, certain, then Buddha say, Rahula, you should practice restraint. You should avoid all these actions. Similarly, this before Buddha said, before you do anything, any action. Similarly, while you are doing, while you are doing the time also, you have to reflect whether this action caused suffering to others, to myself, or to both sides. Even after doing that action, you also have to reflect. After doing it already, you also have to reflect whether this action caused harm to others, to myself, or to both sides. If yes, avoid them. Practice self-restraint. Don't do. This is a guideline for you if you want to perfect your morality training. Five precepts are very basic only. You have to enlarge your abstaining more and more based on this guideline given by Buddha to his son Rahula. Okay. So once you perfect your morality training, you feel very happy already. Non-remorse. Whenever you think of your bodily action, physical action, and mental action, you have no remorse in your heart. Then your meditation will go very smoothly. Whenever you sit down, you can first think of your morality first. This one type of meditation. Think of the purity of your mind, purity of your action, your bodily action, your your verbal action, and your mental action. Nothing to be remorse. Then the mind become glad, happy. When your mind becomes glad and happy, then you keep your attention under your nostril, breathing in, breathing out. Very soon, your mind settled down on the breath very, very quickly. Because Buddha said, happiness produces concentration. So this is one of the considerations, one of the reasons why we should cultivate morality training. Okay, now we come to concentration training. Concentration training, there are so many ways. According to Visuddhimagga, there are 40 ways. But today, I just want to focus on one, Anapanasati, because you have practiced it this morning. So I want to repeat it again. Okay. Concentration. What is concentration? Concentration means unification of the mind. All the mind are unified together on a single object. Let's say in-breath and out-breath. So when the mind unified together and put evenly, it put all the mental factors put evenly on the object, then the mind will develop. The concentration will develop. And to make progress in the concentration, you have to overcome the five hindrances first. Now, to attain jhana, you have to remove all the hindrances first. What is the meaning of jhana? Jhana means burn out all the hindrances. So if you can burn out all the hindrances, then you will attain jhana. What are the five hindrances? Number one, sensual desire. Sensual desire. Second, okay, let me ask you, what sensual desire you have during the retreat? What sensual desire you have during retreat? No pain, not possible. No pain, no gain. No pain, not possible until you enter into jhana. Food, no? One day retreat, not so much. 1 month retreat, you will long for good food. This is called one type of sensual desire. So we have to get rid of this by contemplating by way of four elements. You can use four elements meditation to contemplate while you are eating. But now, I don't think I have time to share. Okay? So first, you must get rid of the sensual desire hindrance. Second one, ill will. To get rid of the ill will, is more easy. Use what? Loving kindness. If you get angry with somebody, use loving kindness. But say is very easy, right? If you get angry with him, how can I send metta to him again? It becomes so difficult. Only when you master your mind, you can. You feel it very easy. But so long you not yet master your mind, directly send loving kindness is not easy. It's better use compassion meditation. And when you get very angry with this person, because he has done you wrong, right? Otherwise, you don't have to get angry with him. So when he has done you wrong, you should think of his bad action. Think that, this bad thing, he has done such bad thing to me, he has to pay for it. He has to undergo three types of result. What? Current life, result. Next life, result. And indefinitely effective result. So when you think of he has to undergo so many suffering because of you, right? Without you, he will not get angry, because of you. So then you will have compassion for him. This is more effective than directly say metta. You see, he has to undergo so many suffering, then the suffering he inflicted to you compare the suffering he has to undergo, then your suffering is minor, small thing. Never mind. He will say, never mind. Yeah? Then this is called compassion. So using compassion meditation and also forgiveness. Nothing happened without cause. Why he inflict pain to you? They must have reason. They must have reason. The reason may not be in this life. The reason may come from past life. So you should think, reflect. Sabbe sata kamma saka. All beings has karma as its heir, its heritage. So today I have to suffer because of him. Sure, because in the past I have done him wrong. I have done him wrong. Now the karma just ripen only. He is only mean to make the karma ripen only. So not sooner or later the karma will ripen. So you understand sabbe sata karma saka, then easily you will not have anger towards him. Easily you can forgive him. So when the anger arises, use compassion meditation and use equanimity meditation. By reflecting, karma is one's own heir or heritage. Then third, restless and remorse. Restless and remorse. Restless you can overcome by counting method. Count your breath again and again, again and again. If cannot, then sometimes you need to breathe loudly. Breathing in little bit loud when you are alone, not when you are in a group. Otherwise, you become the object of everybody's hate. Now, not the object of everybody's metta already. The object of everyone's hate, because one person's breathing can affect all the yogis. Okay, so remorse. In the Theravada tradition, we make determination. Whatever wrong deed we have performed, we make determination not to do again. And we should not think again and again the wrong we have done. If you think again and again the wrong you have done, it becomes a habit. When it becomes a habit, then you cannot get rid of it. Habit is very difficult to change. Worse still, when you come to the dying moment, when come to the dying moment, also you still think of the wrong deed you have done, then 99%, even 100%, we will go to unhappy destination in the next life. Therefore, whatever wrong we have done, forget it, but make a determination not to do it again. Restrain ourselves not to repeat it again. That's all. We should not think. We should not recall it again and again. That's not good for development. It only causes sadness, sorrow, and restless, which directly opposed to concentration. Okay? So next, slow and topper. Slow and topper, just open your eyes, stand up, pulling your ears, then you can overcome and reduce the intake of the food. The food can cause strong slow and topper. And the last one, doubt. Doubt is not a hindrance for Asian, but a great hindrance for Westerner. Because Asian people are faith-oriented. They don't have so many doubts. Western people are wisdom-oriented. Everything they also want to doubt. So doubt is not your problem. If you have doubt, approach a competent teacher. Ask the question to solve your doubt. to clarify all the uncertainty. Then you remove the doubt. Okay, so after removing all these five hindrances, the mind settled down on the breath very easily. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. No slow and topple, no restlessness, no remorse. Gradually, the breath become more and more subtle, more and more subtle, until sometimes you cannot feel the breath. When you cannot feel the breath, usually only when the mind become very subtle, then you cannot feel the breath. If your mind is gross, then the breath also will become gross. So when the breath becomes subtle, from the gross becomes subtle, you should understand you are making progress. Don't think that just now the breath is so clear, now no more breath, I am going backward. No. Anapanasati is very different from other meditation subjects. The more progress you make, the more subtle the breath will be. Until you cannot feel the breath. When you cannot feel the breath, don't worry. Don't think that you are going to die. Okay? Get rid of all the hindrances, all the restlessness, and all the worry. Remain focused. Remain, keep attention under the nostril, and strengthen your mindfulness. Because your mindfulness is not strong to be aware of the breath, to be aware of the subtle breath. So strengthen your mindfulness, then the breath, you will feel the breath again. Now after you feel the subtle breath again, little bit subtle breath again, the mind become more and more subtle, then suddenly the light appear. The light. Suddenly the light appear. For the first time, when the light appear, you cannot believe it. If you have never heard about the light, you will think, my God, am I out of my mind? How come suddenly so bright? I'm sitting in the dark room. So the time you have anxiety again, anxious again, worry again. All this because you do not understand the practice. This is also one of the reasons I want you to read. When you read, you know, what will happen next step. What will you encounter in next step? Then when you really see the light, what the teacher says is correct. Now I see it already. Then you will not be worried. You will not stop short. Okay? So when the light comes, know it. Know it. 1 few seconds, the light will disappear. Because the light is produced by concentration. And so long the concentration is not stable yet, the light also will not stable. It just comes, go, comes, go. You don't care first when the light comes, don't care about the light. Just remain concentrate on your breath again and again, and the light come back, and this time will become brighter. Brighter. And don't be suspicious. And ask yourself whether this light is real or not. Why not I open my eye and see? When you open your eye and see, you cannot see anything. The light is seen by the mind, not by the ordinary eyes. It's seen by the mind. We call the eye, the mind, the mind's eye. So don't open your eyes. Remain, concentrate on your breath. First, the light appear like gray color, like smoke. We call parikama nimitta. Nimitta. And for anapanasati, the light must be under the nostril or around the nostril. If it's far away from nostril, we do not consider it as nimitta. Nimitta means the sign of concentration. So it must under the nostril or around the nostril. If it's far away from the head or behind the head, all this are called light, not considered as nimitta. Okay. So first, nimitta come is gray color, like smoke. Then you don't concentrate on it. You still concentrate on your limit, on the breath. Continuing breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. When your concentration become deepened, then the light become, the nimitta become white color. White color we call learning sign. Learning sign. Ugaha nimitta. We call learning sign. As you keep on concentrate on your breath, and the nimitta will change to become more and more brilliant. The learning sign, the second type of nimitta is white color. White. Like cloud. Or like cotton wool. And when the concentration become deeper and deeper, it change like brilliant, like diamond. Like morning sun, diamond, very bright. Here, under the nostril here. So when the nimitta come, when for some people the nimitta can become very stable. Stable means that it does not change. It does not change form, it does not disappear. But for some people, only 10 minutes disappear. Or keep on changing color from purple, blue, red, white, keep on changing. This is unstable nimitta. So at this time, we have to continue concentrate on your breath to deepen your concentration. When your concentration become deep, then the nimitta will become stable. It will not change form, it will not change color so often. And also it will not disappear. And when the nimitta is stable, there all the time for around 30 minutes. It's there for 30 minutes. And at this time, you can keep your attention, put your attention inside that nimitta. Forget the breath. Don't look at the breath anymore. This time is very important. You should know, when should I look at the nimitta? When should I not look at the nimitta? You have to look at the nimitta only when the nimitta is stable. What is stable? How long is called stable? Only when the nimitta is there all the time, not disappearing, not changing form, there all the time for 30 minutes. And you don't say, check the time. 30 minutes. If you check the time, nimitta leave you faster because your concentration breaks. The moment you leave your breath, your concentration breaks. So your mind think of, let me check the time. It's restless. It's called restless. Then the concentration go down, disperse. You just roughly know the nimitta is there, very stable, enough for me. Then you lift your breath. Don't look at the breath anymore. Look at the nimitta. Let your mind sink inside the nimitta. But sometimes for some yogis, before the mind sink into nimitta, before he direct his mind to see the nimitta, sometimes the nimitta appear like a magnet pull your mind inside. And at this time, many people also get very panic, worry, anxious again. What happened to me? The mind pull my body all inside the nimitta. And because uncertain, worry, anxious, then somebody will try to separate the mind from the nimitta again. Lose a golden chance. One of my students, American, after 6 days, 10 days retreat, after 6 days, he has very good experience, the nimitta pull his mind in. He was so afraid. You know what will happen. So he said, no. So he separate his mind from the nimitta. He doesn't want the mind go inside the nimitta. He resists the experience. Then he come and report to me. I said, no. For so many people, the nimitta appear like magnet, pull your mind in, then you let your mind in. The Dhamma is unfold itself. You have to flow with the Dhamma. Don't resist. Oh, then he start to know this good experience. Then he said, sister, okay, tomorrow I will try again. So tomorrow you try, nothing happened. Another day, try again, nothing happened. She tried very hard, you know, want the experience to come back. One day, nothing happened. Second day, nothing happened. Third day, nothing happened. Fourth day, he told me, sister, I give up. The moment he said, I give up, nimitta come back again. So from here, you should learn a lesson. What lesson should you learn? Now first, the first lesson you should learn, no expectation. No expectation. Whatever comes, comes. Whatever goes. You cannot result. Certain experience cannot be repeated. If you try to repeat that experience, you are strengthening your atta. Your atta. You know atta? Self. Now you are strengthening yourself. You want something to happen. You want something to happen. This is called atta. Dhamma does not listen to your wish. Dhamma happens according to cause and conditions, right? When the conditions are there, it happens. When the conditions are not there, it does not happen. That's all. So you have to learn a lesson from his experience. The moment he does not expect anything, then he go very naturally, flow with the Dhamma, then nimitta come back. Okay? So when the nimitta come back, then sink the mind. Sink the mind into it. Then you can stay in that nimitta as long as you can. If you can stay there for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours without any thoughts in you, then you have attained jhana. Without any thoughts. But for many people, now first attaining jhana, it will not last for so long. Maybe half an hour. Half an hour, no thought. After that, some thought come in. Then the mind concentration drops again. So this is how to attain jhana. It's called concentration practice. When you attain jhana, the mind becomes very brilliant, workable, soft, malleable, wealthy, and the mind, the time. That type of mind, suitable for vipassana. Very suitable for vipassana. Because the mind already tame, listen to you already. Already tame, become soft, workable, malleable. So at that time, you can penetrate into your mind and body and see anicca, dukkha, anatta of 5 aggregate. So there are many ways to practice insight. If you want to practice insight from Anapanasati, according to what Venerable Sariputta practice, you can do it. In Majjhima Nikaya, Sutta 111. Buddha mentioned how Venerable Sariputta practice this after jhana. Then he come out from jhana, he discern mental factors. So here today, I want to share with you a little bit. Although it's very profound, but just to strengthen your knowledge. After entering into jhana, you stay in a jhana, then you have to discern jhana factor. First jhana, how many jhana factors we have? In the first jhana, 5. You got to learn by heart, this 5. First, vitakka, initial application of the mind. Second, vichara, sustained application of the mind. Third, piti, joy. Fourth, sukha, happiness. Fifth, One-pointedness or ekagata. So when you enter into first jhana, these five jhana factors are very clear. Very clear. So you must know it. It's very clear in your mind. So you must know these five jhana factors and check whether these five jhana factors are there or not. When they are there, and after emerge from the jhana, of course you have to do many days before you discern, before you go to vipassana. Stabilize your jhana first, stabilize your concentration first. Then after many days, when the concentration is stabilized, then you emerge from the jhana, then you see each jhana factor. First vitaka, then second vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata. Later on, you discern each jhana factor as impermanent. Each jhana factor, you know vitaka, then try to contemplate vitaka, impermanent. Then vichara, impermanent. Piti, impermanent. Sukha, impermanent. Ekagata, impermanent. Start with these five jhana factors, contemplate them as impermanent. So now we are moving from concentration to insight. Later on, you can increase the mental factor. Five jhana factors are only five. Not only five. We have so many other mental factors. We can use investigation of the Dhamma. Dhamma Vichaya. The seven bojanga, the second one. Dhamma Vichaya. Investigate. Investigation of the Dhamma. So first, you can breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, and ask yourself, who knows the breath? Who knows the breath? How you answer? When you breathe in and breathe out. Now I ask you a question. I ask you a question. Who knows the breath? How you answer? Louder? Okay, the mind. But the mind consists of so many mental factors. If you read Abhidhamma, mind is not only one. Inside the mind, there are so many mental factors. So who knows? Who knows the breath? Consciousness. Consciousness knows the breath. If you don't ask this question, all the time you will think, I know the breath. Right? If I don't ask you this question, all the time you will entertain the thought of I. I know the breath. But because I ask, you dare not to speak I. You dare not to tell me, answer me, I know the breath. But if I don't ask, in your heart, you will know. I know the breath. Your answer is, I know the breath. So if you say, I know the breath, this is called wrong view of I. Then who knows the breath? Consciousness knows the breath. This is called investigation of the Dhamma. You investigate one by one. So who knows the breath? Consciousness knows the breath. Okay, you can ask you again. Who directs the mind to the breath? Mental formation. Who directs the mind to the breath? The mind will not automatically come to the breath one, right? Somebody must, I should not say somebody, there's nobody. Something or some mental factor must direct the mind to the breath. Otherwise, the mind will go somewhere else, even go to the breath. So who directs the mind to the breath? Attention, manasikara. Attention. You must have some Abhidhamma knowledge. All this are in my book. You want to know more detail, go and read my book. Okay? So attention, direct the mind to the breath. And you start to understand, this attention. Attention is not I, not mine, not myself. Okay? Another one. So when you know the breath and attention direct your mind to the breath, who perceive the breath? Perception, yes. Perception perceives the breath. And perception is neither I, neither me, neither myself, right? Perception is just a mental factor. And when you enter into first jhana, there's happiness. who feel the happiness? Very good feeling. Feeling feels the happiness. Before that, you will say, I feel the happiness. Huh? Now you know, feeling feel the happiness. Then you know, oh, this feeling. Okay. Then, as you are mindful of the breath, your mind keep on remembering the breath. Who? Not forget the breath. Who? Not forget the breath. Dhamma. Nama. Nama. Oh, nama is very white. Inside Dhamma, there are many mental factors. Mindfulness. Mindfulness is not forget the breath. This is sometimes you are forgetful. People say, you are not mindful, right? So whenever you are not mindful, then you become forgetful. So who not forget the breath? Mindfulness. So you know, how can I remember the breath all the time? Because I'm mindful. The moment I'm not mindful, then I forget the breath. So mindfulness, remember the breath. Then who accumulate good karma? Very good volition. When your mind is with the breath, then you are accumulating good karma, and not ordinary karma, higher karma. So who accumulating that karma is volition. Volition is the head of all the karma. So at each time, volition is performed its task by accumulating good karma. So if you analyze one by one, then you start to understand and ask yourself again, is the attention I, myself or not? Yes or no? No. Automatically you will answer no. Is feeling I, myself or not? No. Is perception I, myself or not? No. Is volition I, myself or not? No. Is consciousness myself or not? No. Then you start to see non-self nature of mental factors. Not very difficult, right? Later on, you can categorize. Okay, they say perception, perceive the breath. Then you can group perception under perception aggregate. Feeling, feel the happiness of the breath. You can group feeling under feeling aggregate. Consciousness knows the breath. Then you group consciousness under consciousness aggregate. Then attention, mindfulness, some more, volition. All these are under formation aggregate. Then one more, form aggregate, all five aggregate. Perception aggregate, feeling aggregate, volition aggregate, consciousness aggregate. One more, form aggregate. What is form aggregate? When we talk about form, we must not forget four elements. Yes, four elements. So this wind, breathing in, breathing out. Wind is made up by four elements, but has wind element. In-breath and out-breath is made up by four elements, but has wind element as predominant factor only. So you analyze this in-breath and out-breath, you find there are four elements inside. Sometimes cold, hot, this fire element, right? Then the pushing of the wind in and out is wind element. Then sometimes the breath is very soft, this earth element. Then water element is cohesion. A bit difficult to discern. So you understand the in-breath and out-breath consists of four elements. And you understand form aggregate. Then you also understand these four elements is not myself, right? Not I, not me, not myself. So you start to understand non-self of five aggregate. And later on, you also can discern each mental factor as impermanent. One knowing, second time disappear, then arising, one breath, you know the mental factor, then breathe out, all the mental factor disappear, another breath, they appear. appear again, then appear again, disappear again. Then you know arising and falling of the mental factors. So you can contemplate impermanent suffering, impermanent and non-self of mind and body already. Later on, when you see the mental factor keep on arising and passing away, then it will give you a sense of oppression, a sense of suffering. At the time, you start to understand why Buddha, what the real meaning of suffering. Constantly oppressed by arising and ceasing is called suffering in the teaching of the Buddha. So without seeing arising and passing away, it's very difficult to understand suffering. So by constantly seeing the mental factor arise and pass away, then you will understand what Buddha meant suffering. So what is impermanent? Buddha said, what is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering? What is impermanent is suffering. What is impermanent and suffering cannot be regarded as permanent self. Therefore, they are non-self. So from the concentration training, you are moving to insight. Now we start to see the five aggregate as impermanent, as suffering, as non-self. Before you see five aggregate as impermanent, suffering, and non-self, do you have attachment to the five aggregate or not? Yes. We have strong attachment to the five aggregate. And this attachment is the origin of suffering. It's the origin of suffering. Now, through our own insight meditation, through our own practical experience, we understand these five aggregate are suffering, are impermanent, and non-self. So, gradually we give up that attachment because it's arising and passing away. How to attach? How to attach? We only can attach to thing which is permanent, right? If it arises and passes away, how to attach? So your experience will tell you not to attach. And also it's suffering. We only attach to things bring happiness. We cannot attach to thing bring suffering. The thing bring suffering, we just want to run away. We were not attached to it. So when you see the mind and body, the five aggregate appear as suffering, also we will let go of our attachment. And when you see the five aggregate appear as non-self, non-self means that something you cannot control. You have no power, you cannot exercise any power of control. It's called non-self. So you also see all these phenomena, mind and body, mental factors, four elements, are beyond your control. They are arising and passing away, are beyond your control. Therefore, since beyond my control, then no need to control, let go of it. Then you also let go of your attachment to the five aggregates. The more you experience anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanent, suffering, and non-self, the more detachment you develop towards five aggregate. So long you cannot experience anicca, dukkha, anatta, you will remain attached to your mind and body. Therefore, the vipassana practice, the insight meditation, the purpose of insight meditation practice is to let you see the danger, the fault of the five aggregate. Without seeing the fault and the danger of five aggregate, no one want to let go of the attachment towards five aggregate. For example, a child, he is fascinated by a firewood. When people pray firewood, oh, it's so beautiful, colorful, so beautiful. So the child developed strong attachment to that firewood for a long, long time. One day, out of curiosity, he touched that firewood. What happened? He was burned. He was burned, then he started to understand this firewood is dangerous. It's not as beautiful as I think. It's very dangerous. So second time, not to say second time, next time when he see the firewood, he will go very far away. He will not come close to the firewood anymore. He will turn away from the firewood. Similarly, before you can see the anicca, dukkha, anatta of your mind and body, we have strong attachment to the mind and body, just like a child has strong attachment to the firewood. Think mind and body bring us happiness, bring us pleasure, and so on. And think that we can control the mind and body. But now, by directly observing this mind and body, you see its nature of arising and passing away, and repeated arising and passing away give a sense of unsatisfactory, and no one can control the whole process of arising and passing away. It's non-self. So you start to see the fault, the danger of five aggregate. Just like a boy, the child see the danger, was burned by the firewood and start to know its danger. And only then your mind will turn away from the attachment to the five aggregate. When you give up or when you turn away your attachment to the five aggregate, your mind is liberated. When the mind is liberated, this is the end of all suffering. Therefore, this is the insight meditation, or we call wisdom training. Wisdom training is to see the things as they really are. What are the things as they really are? The five aggregate as impermanent, suffering and non-self. These are the things as they really are. To see things as they really are in order to develop disenchantment towards them. When your mind is no more bound to them, bind to them, then you are free. Now our mind still strongly bind to the five aggregate. Okay, so as a conclusion, the teaching of the Buddha is a gradual training. First we developed morality, then we developed concentration, then finally we developed wisdom. However, although it's a gradual training, but sometimes even though developing concentration and wisdom also can help us to purify our morality. When you have concentration, your mind becomes so sensitive, you don't want to do any unwholesome things. Your mind is so sensitive to an unskillful thing. Now, without concentration, sometimes the mind is not sensitive. Even doing wrong already, only after doing wrong you start to realize, because your mind is not sensitive. But after developing concentration, your mind becomes so sensitive, little bit unwholesome thing you know already, you don't want to do it. Therefore, concentration also helps the morality training. And by developing wisdom, especially understand cause and effect relationship, also you will not do unwholesome things, because you also understand the effect. So this three, morality, concentration and wisdom, helping each other, mutually support one another. Okay, so that's all for my talk today. Any question? You want to pass mic to?
How can we actually use the jhana to recalculate our past life experience and also make projections for our future life.
This is very long process. Huh? After jhana also, only jhana not enough. Sometimes you only jhana not enough. You have to go to analyze the body to see all the kalapa and all the kalapa, and each kalapa consists of how many elements. Then also must see all the mental factor, distinguish mind and nama rupa. Then only then you slowly trace back your nama rupa. Maybe 10 days ago, 20 days ago, 1 month ago, 1 year ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, up to mother's womb. Nama rupa up to mother's womb. Then you will see one karma performed during your previous life before dying moment. From mother's womb, you trace back again. Then you will see one of the karma performed in a past life. Then gradually you understand the past life. Future is uncertain. Don't care about future first. Future can change one. Anytime can change. It's a bit, difficult to explain unless you have very strong Abhidhamma base.
When our karma is ripened, how is there any way we can, or anything we can do to neutralize it if it's bad karma?
How to know when our karma will ripen? This is beyond our comprehension. Karma, Buddha said, there are four types, there are four things one should not think of. If one keep on thinking of it, one will go crazy. Buddha say four things. One of the four is karma. How karma work, when it ripen, how it ripen, all is beyond our comprehension. So first question is beyond our comprehension. Second one, how to neutralize it, right? Suppose there's a bowl of salty water. This salty water is very, very, very salty. How to dilute it? Add more water. So you add more your good karma, add more wholesome karma. Means do more good things. When you do more good things and put inside the salty water, then the unwholesome karma will become diluted. Then you can neutralize your unwholesome karma. By doing more good deeds, then your unwholesome karma lose many chances to ripen. Just your army. This wholesome karma, army is very strong. First, let's say unwholesome karma, army is stronger than wholesome karma. Then since this stronger, then this one come out first, stronger come out first, right? This one, wholesome karma is lighter. So wholesome karma will not ripen first, but unwholesome karma will ripen first. But now you try very hard to perform a lot of good deeds. Then you let the wholesome karma raise up and higher than the unwholesome one. Then the wholesome karma become more powerful than the unwholesome one. Then the wholesome karma will ripen first. This one, unwholesome will be delayed. This is the way you can help yourself. Okay. Any other question?
Just now you gave four. This is the other three that we mustn't think about it.
Okay, the other three that we mustn't think about it is the power of the Buddha. The power of the Buddha is beyond our comprehension. And the third one is the power of jhana. The power of jhana, the power of psychic power. Because of jhana, you can perform psychic power. How can a person fly in the sky? You just cannot understand, right? How can a person fly in the sky? How can I disappear here and appear somewhere else? How can I transform myself? How can I make myself become 100,000 Siale Susila? That's all beyond logic. So also beyond our comprehension. And the fourth one is, I think, the origination of the world. How the world starts, how the world ends, how the world starts. All these are beyond our comprehension. No more question? Yeah. To prepare for jhana 2, you have to master the jhana first. Jhana. Huh? If you not yet master the first jhana, and yet you want to go to second jhana, you will lose both. You will lose both. This mentioned by the Buddha. Huh? So first you must master the jhana, first jhana. How to master it? You have to keep on training your mind. Huh? There are five mastery. One is averting the mind to the jhana factor. Second one is you must determine to stay, you must have the ability to enter into jhana as fast as possible. Let's say, I want to enter into jhana within 5 minutes. Then you sit 20 minutes also, cannot enter into jhana. Then it's called no mastery of entering into jhana. Huh? So, you want to enter into jhana within 1 second, you can go. 3 seconds, you can go. 3 minutes, you can go. That's called mastery of entering into jhana. Then after entering into jhana, you also must master the time you stay in the jhana. How long? They say, I want to stay in the jhana for 10 minutes. Then after 10 minutes, you emerge from the jhana. Or you want to stay the jhana for 4 hours. You can sit for 4 hours. After 4 hours, you will come out from the jhana. This is called mastery. The stay of the jhana. Then the fourth one is emerge. When you want to emerge from the jhana, you can emerge from the jhana. You want to emerge from jhana immediately or after 2 hours, after 10 hours, then you can do it. Okay. And the last one is to discern the jhana factor. Discerning all the 5 jhana factor. This 5 mastery. Once you attain the first jhana, you have to perfect this 5 mastery. It's very important during Buddha's time. Especially, you must know how to come out from jhana. Because during Buddha's time, sometimes Buddha said, Buddha want to meet you. I want to meet Bhikkhu A. Bhikkhu A enter into jhana, cannot come out. Then, what to do? So, you must know how to master the 5 jhana before you go to second jhana. When you attend second jhana also, you must learn how to master the second jhana. To attend into second jhana, you must drop the 2 mental factors, vitaka, vichara. Drop these 2, reflect the thought of these 2 jhana factor, then make the intention to drop it. Then you go back to the breath. Then gradually you will enter into a jhana without vitaka and vichara. The concentrated mind see things as they really are. There are many benefits of jhana. There are many benefits. First, the peace of the mind. When you enter into jhana, the mind is very, very peaceful. A lot of happiness, joy, happiness. And one of my friend, I think one or few of my students say that the jhana bliss is much more happy than worried worry like sexual things, sexual intercourse and so on. The jhana bliss is much more superior, much more happiness. Okay? Then second one, when you have jhana, you can develop psychic power. Without jhana, you cannot develop psychic power. And pleasant abiding, jhana is called pleasant abiding for arahant. And the fourth, concentrated mind, see things as they really are. Because the jhana make the mind very soft, workable, malleable, radiant. Then it's ready for insight meditation. You need a teacher to tell you. Without teacher, one can get attachment to the first jhana. But with teacher, the teacher will ask you to move on. Without teacher, you're just stuck there. Therefore we emerge from jhana. Sometimes we contemplate impermanent of that jhana factor, in order not to get attached to it.
Can a person without entering jhana go straight to vipassana?
Yes. According to commentary, yes. This is called vipassana yanika. We have samatha yanika and vipassana yanika. Vipassana yanika has no jhana. Samatha yanika using jhana as a base. Vipassana yanika not using jhana as base. So don't worry, if you don't have jhana, also don't worry. You still can use insight meditation to liberate yourself. Okay, any other question? Last question?
Is it safer that you go into vipassana than going to jhana and stuck there for long?
As long as you have teacher, you are not stuck in the jhana. The teacher will ask you to move on. But if you don't have the teacher, you may stuck there.
Yeah.
Because jhana is very blissful.
Yeah.
Therefore, you must learn under a competent teacher. Don't meditate on your own and without teacher. Very difficult to make progress. Even when you are making progress, you do not know. You thought you are going backward. Certain progress is not what you think of. Okay, if there's no question, we can stop here. Okay. Yang du nimitta awa manggalancha yo cha manapo sakuna sasado papa gaho du sepinang akantang buddha nupawena winasamintu yang du nimitta awa manggalancha yo cha manapo sakuna sasado Papa gaho du supinang akantang Dhamma nupawena winasamintu Yang du nimitang awa manggalancha Yo cha manapo sakuna sasado Papa gaho du supinang akantang Sangka nupawena winasamintu Dukha patachani dukha Baya patachani baya Soka patachani soka Soka hontu sabbe pipanino itawata chammehi sampadang punya sampadang sabbe dewa anumodantu sappa sampati siddhiya akasata cha bhummatha dewa naga mahidika punyatang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu sasanang Cirang rakkhantu desanang, cirang rakkhantu mang paranti. Please follow me. Idang me, punyang, nipanasa, pachayo, hotu, mama punya bagang, sabba satanam bhajema te sabbe me samam punya bhagam labantu sadhu sadhu. May all of you be well and happy and live with the Dharma. Mm-hmm.